everyone. Welcome to CuniQuest, episode 391, Nintendo Direct Edition. I'm your host, Mike Apps, a.k.a. Wheels, and with me as always.
Legally alive by most definitions, David McBurney, Family Master.
Are you really sure about that? Well, certainly live by all current legal definitions. Your man in Japan, Michael Baker, Gaijin Nogatari.
And this is Joe Hanley, Smokin' Joe Gamer.
The worst thing I've ever heard.
I'm a frequent guest on Q&A Quest.
He said that's the worst name I ever heard. He didn't even do the full Simpsons bit. He just sounded like
no. Joey Jojo Jr. Chabadoo.
Yeah, it's too late now.
I'm just gonna, I need to fight Wheels in the street.
At least they didn't use the soundboard.
Give it time.
It's true.
It did not add anything to the soundboard, and I will not be using it too much, if at all. We'll see.
Give it time.
But it desperately needs... Where's my purse? That's my purse! Yeah.
I don't know you. good times. Yeah.
This should be a relatively short episode, because certain members of us are very tired. It's probably all of us in some respect. But we got a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad.
Announced and then done in 24 hours time. And we'll have another one next week.
Yippee. That one is probably going to be more sizable.
That one's definitely going to have a lot more detail in it.
Yeah.
Which is not to undersell what this one was, which was very much the Switch One will continue to receive stranger and stranger software in its twilight years.
I'm okay with this.
Which we would only expect, yes.
The glorious return of Tomodachi life for some reason.
What?
Very popular among a certain crowd.
I'd be confused with Tomagachi, the toys from the 90s.
Tamagotchi. It's a portmanteau. Egg and watch. Let's see. Although there was a Tamagotchi game announced, but it looked like Drek. See what else was there. Saw more of the weird Pac-Man.
Okay, that game is just deeply unsettling.
I want to play it.
It's now apparently a part of Namco's weirdest timeline.
Pac-Man Metroidvania.
Let me see if I can pull up this.
Peku Peku. To flap Pac-Man one's mouth. Pac-Man.
So there is a United Galaxy Space Force Namco website that arranges a number of deeply strange games into a timeline. A timeline which includes Ace Combat 3 and no other Ace Combat. Cyber Sled, Galaga, Dig Dug, and this fucking Pac-Man Metroidvania.
Shadow Labyrinth, is that the name of it?
Yeah, it's Shadow Labyrinth.
So weird.
I think it's neat.
It is. It's neat. Like, weird things are neat. Like, that needs to be understood. But yes, Ace Combat 3 is in the same timeline as Shadow Labyrinth. Also, the original Dig Dug and Dig Dug 2.
Interesting.
Mr. Driller is also in that timeline, which means that by necessity, this is also listed, but Baraduke must also be in that timeline. Mr. Driller is the son of the protagonist of Dig Dug and the protagonist of Baraduke.
I don't even know that second one.
It's a relatively obscure Namco arcade game from the 80s.
That would explain it.
Yep. Some places knew it as Alien Sector, which still probably not ringing any bells.
Mm.
It was arcade only except for a Sharp X68000 port. But yeah, so that's fun. That's a neat little... but yeah, I mean, Shadow Labyrinth, despite the absurdity, or perhaps because of the absurdity of its premise, is amusing looking. But there were cool things for people like us there. There was a remake of Raido Kuzunoha versus the Soulless Army.
Yes.
Now rechristened Raido Kuzunoha and the Mystery of the Soulless Army.
That was the second game, right?
No. Abaddon
came. No, the second one had giant locusts.
Okay. Yeah, the second one is Raido Kuzunoha versus King Abaddon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And locusts as in the actual demons mentioned in the Book of Revelation crossed with giant grasshoppers.
Yeah, fun.
So, yeah.
That's interesting, because it looks like he had two devils in battle, which I thought was a feature.
It looks like they've made some...
That would have been an update then.
Yeah, it looks like they've made more significant updates than they did to, like, Shin Megami Tensei 3 HD.
Cool.
It does look like... Okay.
I'm interested in playing this one in English, finally, because I wrote the impressions for both games, but I could only play them in Japanese. And demon dialogues in Japanese get kind of weird on some of the...
Oh, I would imagine.
Grammar. Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, but I would suspect that that's a more... That they've done more to that than some of the other ones they've re-released, just by virtue of the fact that they actually renamed it.
Mm-hmm.
Our resident our resident grognards when it comes to voice acting will probably be at least nonplussed to know that this game never had voice acting to begin with, so it probably won't again.
Yeah, I mean those PS2 SMT games, I think Persona 3 and 4 are basically the only ones with voice acting.
No, I mean for the Raido games, this was a specific choice that was done. Mm-hmm. I remember reading the interview on this, because mm-hmm. it's set in like 1930 and it's supposed to have this like noir style to it. They just went silent movie on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was never envisioned as having voice acting ever.
Yeah, it takes place in like a fake year. It takes place in like Taisho 20, so I think it's like 1932.
Yeah. Because Taisho period only lasts 10 years.
Yeah, it was real short.
Yeah. I mean, that's the first nod that this is not the normal timeline that we're dealing with.
It's very funny to me that it led with, that the English trailer leads with, it's the year Taisho 20, and it's like, I don't think that most people watching this trailer are going to immediately get why that number is weird.
Yeah, but if they had just said 1932, wouldn't have...
Yeah, it's one of those, like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But, yeah. So that's coming out. That looks like it's actually gotten some reasonably heavy updating. I already put in a pre-order. I know what I'm about.
Same.
Coming out on, I think, PS5, Steam, and Switch. I think it might come out on Xbox. I can't remember. I saw fucking Wario.
I think I saw a pre-order for an Xbox version too.
Yeah, I was looking at like a Wario 64 thing to figure it out. Yeah, there's a series version, so that one's not getting left out in the cold.
So who wants to talk about golf?
Hot Shots Golf? That's weird.
Everybody's golf, Hot Shots?
Yeah. And I did a little extra digging. It's published by Bandai Namco. And looks like it is also coming to PS5 and Steam, but no mention of Xbox.
Nope. Let's see. But yeah, a weird thing. Sony at least used to own everybody's golf. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, because there was that PS4 game, Everybody's Golf, and yeah, it got a VR version.
Like, in Japan, everybody's, like, everywhere with the U.S., Hot Shots Golf was always Everybody's Golf.
Yeah. And then here it was Hot Shots, and then we got Everybody's Golf.
Yeah,
and then,
Everybody's Golf, Hot Shots.
So then there was Clap Hands Golf, was exclusive to Apple Arcade, and then got ported to Switch, renamed Easy Come Easy Golf.
Yeah, Clap Hands was the developer of almost every Everybody's Golf from 2 until I think this one. This one appears to be developed by a company called Hyde, which might be another alias for Clap Hands. I don't know.
Yeah, Clap Hands did the Vita game that later got ported to PS3 as well.
Yeah, Clap Hands was the series steward for many, many years. But yeah, I'm seeing a press release saying like it's Bandai Namco in cooperation with Sony Interactive Entertainment, which seems to have happened for a few games because we also got a Potapone collection.
Yeah, that was the fuck.
It seems because like that's also Bandai Namco, I guess. Like, on some level, Sony wants to kind of avoid giving the overt impression that their older games are, I guess they're trying to, like, reputation wash them away from it looking like their older games are coming to other platforms. I don't know.
Weird.
It's weird. Like, both of those, like, Namco Bandai is involved in some fashion, and I don't know why. But, yeah, Potapone 1 and 2. Switch, PS5, PC, like a bunch of these. It's like, Potapone was one of the games made by the dearly departed Japan studio.
Mm.
Or at least development assistance on that one.
I think they assisted with Everybody's Golf as well. Yeah.
Probably. I mean, Japan studio was, like, essentially... You know, you have a team, but maybe not all the manpower you need. We can help.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've got... Yeah, a Potapone collection, so that's kind of neat. It's the first two games. As far as I'm aware, those are kind of the ones that people seem to like the best. I never heard many people talk about 3.
I remember reporting on 3 in the past because it was actually close enough to having RPG elements to qualify for coverage on our site.
Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah. And it was also just a good one to mention just because it was apparently never coming out of Japan anyway. Or some, actually, no, it didn't eventually.
Yeah,
it was just worth it to mention on the column way back when, I remember.
Mm-hmm. We're also getting a remake of one of the most one of the least remembered, as far as I can tell, Harvest Moon / Story of Seasons games, Grand Bazaar. I assume this
I don't
must
even
have
remember
sold,
that one.
Yeah, I assume this must have sold reasonably well just by virtue of the fact that it was a DS game at probably about the right time.
Yeah.
But I've never heard anyone talk about this one. I've kept company with a number of Story of Seasons fans. that's happening. There's a lot of... This was a Nintendo Direct for Weird Sickos. There's a Gradius collection that is weird. Like... By dint of the actual games within it, maybe 45% actual Gradius games. The other 4 games in the collection are Salamander, Salamander 2. So it's Gradius 1 through 3, Salamander, Salamander 2, Life Force, which is just a variant of Salamander, and the they just made it up for this collection, Salamander 3. There were originally only two Salamander games. This is a weird selection of shooters. Nothing bad in there, but a very strange thing to produce. But yeah, Gradius Origins with a new shooter if you're a Salamander enjoyer.
Well, but is it the arcade version or the TurboGrafx-16 version of Salamander? Okay, because they're different, and then Life Force is slightly different too. Yeah, they're actually
Life Force has a bunch of additional levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's anything, it's the arcade versions. We got Rhythm Heaven Groove. There's not been a new Rhythm Heaven in like over a decade, I think.
Wow. When was the last one? What system was that even on?
Might be a dead game.
No.
Let me check.
I know that has a really strong following online.
Yeah, the composer that was most associated with it had some sort of cancer that kept them out of the game for a long time. But they like one of the first things in that trailer was announcing that they were involved. So it seems like part of the reason they held off was that they wanted to make sure. So the previous one was a 3DS game, Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix, but it was kind of like a combo of a bunch of the previously existing ones.
Mm-hmm.
So this would seemingly be like the first like fully new one since like the DS and Wii era. But yeah, so a new Rhythm Heaven, been a long time. For those not aware, Rhythm Heaven was at least in part developed by like the WarioWare team, so it very much has the sensibility of like what if WarioWare was a rhythm game.
Hmm. Wow.
Definitely had a cult following for a long time. The first one was Japan and Europe only Game Boy Advance game. I think in Europe it may have been called Rhythm Paradise or something. And in Japan it was of course Rhythm Tengoku. It looks like Rhythm Paradise in Europe was just the European version of the DS game, so it looks like the very first Rhythm Heaven was Japan GBA only. So, but yeah, devoted following since the mid-2000s, and nice to see it come back. Dragon Quest 1 and 2 HD 2D Remake, which seems to have fucked with Dragon Quest 2 in some very weird fashion. Because it sort of looks like that might have one more party member.
It'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah, I mean, like, one, I would imagine they would want to keep as simple as possible because it's Dragon Quest 1. That's just how it is. That's a very core part of its appeal. Two, with its general reputation both among fans and detractors, is kind of Dragon Quest 1 but harder and weirder. I could see them maybe being a little less precious about making changes to. But yeah, that's still listed for just sometime this year. I'm sure I'll pick it up. I mean, I enjoyed replaying Dragon Quest 3. I'll enjoy playing Dragon Quest 1 and 2 again. For this podcast and this podcast in specific, Saga Frontier 2 Remastered just dropped.
Yay.
I wish there was an option to turn off the upscaled backgrounds, but we cannot have everything. But it is nice to see the game come back. It's a really cool game. Have friends who are not into Saga games who like Frontier 2 because it's a very different game from a lot of the other ones.
Very glad it came back because I want to say like a year and a half ago, there was a leak listing for Remaster 2 and play Asia. So I jumped the gun and sold my PS1 copy.
Rip.
Whoops.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's here, so it's all good.
Yep.
I could see the future.
No, you
or I'm just lucky.
I'm not even convinced of that. Let's see. But yeah, so a lot of very strange niche products. A third game, or perhaps a spinoff, in the Eye of Somnium Files series, which is, again, like a series known for having sicko fans. Marvel Cosmic Invasion, the new thing from Ooh. Tribute Games, the people that did Shredder's Revenge.
Yes.
The sprites have, like, so many homages to the Capcom Versus games. It's it almost looks like it should be actionable. Like, it's like, don't think I've ever seen anyone else draw Storm that way, or Wolverine, or half these characters. But not that you'll see me complaining.
No, the game looks gorgeous.
Yeah, game looks gorgeous. Apparently it's going to have, like, 15 fucking characters in it with more to be added, so...
And it's got some mechanic where you pick two characters and can switch between them. I think that could be pretty cool.
Yeah. I saw, like, a whole bunch of dudes. But yeah, like, they showed a whole bunch of dudes. We saw, like, Spider-Man and Venom and Captain America and Wolverine and Storm and... It looks fun. Looks like a good time. You know, Tribute Games has not let me down yet. I am looking forward to playing that on a shenanigans and, like, getting really mad at Wheels for some reason.
It seems about right.
It sounds about right. Well, he'll pick Spider-Man, and then I'll pick Venom, and then I'll just keep throwing him around.
So
he'll get mad at me.
Just as it should be. Let's see. They showed a bit more of Pokemon Legends Z Alpha and gave us a very good reason to hate its villain, showing a man who's like, I'm going to become the number one in this city and outlaw all forms of transportation except the taxi. And I hate him already.
Wow.
And I will pick Totodile because of course I will. Why wouldn't I?
Because Tepig? That's why.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no. No, I'm not doing that either.
Now I will pick my little blue gator boy and
forget what the
happy.
Grass starter is for this one.
Oh, it's Chikorita, I think.
That's unfortunate. I recall picking Chikorita in Pokemon Silver, because I picked Bulbasaur in the first one, so it's like, why would I not? And then I, like, not realizing, having no context to understand that Chikorita was hard mode.
Yes, it is Chikorita.
Just awful against, like, 90% of the gyms in that region.
I was going to say, wasn't the first two gyms flying and bug in Silver?
Something like that, yeah. Like, it just gets... Yeah. It does not have an easy time against any of them, but it starts out especially just like, why are you even here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Totodile had similar issues in that game, in the original game, because of the physical special split that still existed in that generation. And so, like, water types were supposed to have special attacks, and Totodile was physical.
So. Yeah, that's a curse that exists through Gen 4 for a number of Pokemon.
I remember so many people online being so pissed off because Diamond Pearl ended the physical special split.
Yeah, for those unaware, in Pokemon prior to Gen 4, which type of attack, physical or special, that a move keyed off of was based entirely on its type.
So, if you, for example, if you had a water type Pokemon, that did not have very good gains in special attack, then none of its type attacks are going to do a lot of damage compared to other Pokemon of the same type.
Mm-hmm.
So, since Totodile's evolutions were very much physical stat-based, it really did not get much punch with its actual water attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, was Dark physical or special?
Dark was special as well.
So, and like Feraligatr was water dark, I think? I want to say.
Feraligatr was just water. All of them are monotype in water. Gen 2.
Okay, well, he had a kind of a water look, and also I know for a fact that he had Bite and Crunch.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, basically all of the attacks that you might associate with a giant blue alligator man were next to, I mean, not worthless or useless, but just severely underpowered for what they were, because he just didn't have the stats to back it up, because...
Yeah, the way that these are parceled out in Gen 1 is also just Gen 1 through 3 is also just extremely unintuitive. My favorite of which is Ghost is a physical type.
Yeah.
Mysterious.
I mean, there's a very good reason why they just did away with it and made physical or special inherent to the skill rather than
per move. Type, because
I mean, just some of these made no sense just by the attack being used. Like, Fire Punch is special. And
yeah, which is also why Flareon was garbage among the Eevee evolutions. It was a physically typed fire Pokemon that had absolutely no moves that could take advantage of its... like, a poor learn pool and a bad same-type attack bonus for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a real weird setup. To get back through what was left of the direct of among the things that we might care about, Metroid Prime 4. Yay. Show more of it. It looks nice.
Yes. It looks like the Prime 1 remaster, but better, with more lighting, and you get have like god rays coming down, and it looked like it was 60 FPS, and it's like, wow, this looks really cool.
Retro Studios is a very technically gifted developer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, also Samus is a psychic now for some reason.
Samus gets an awesome new suit and psychic powers. Yeah, why not?
Be louder, angrier, and have access to a time machine.
Mm-hmm.
So they got yeah, let me think. They're saying 2025, no specific release date, but I think we're going to find out next week if it's a Switch 2 launch title or not.
If it's cross-platform, we'll find out. The other thing that's probably worth mentioning is that a few of the games they announced were 2026 titles.
Like, yeah.
I think Chosen specifically, just to be clear, we will continue to be releasing Switch 1 titles after the Switch 2 comes out.
Which hopefully implies that Switch 2 is going to be backwards compatible to help make...
Oh, we've already known that that's backwards compatible.
That's been confirmed, yes.
Sure. Yeah, when they did the announcement, they made it clear that Switch software, physical and digital, would be backwards compatible. There was a little asterisk that I believe is meant to cover things like Labo, which relied on the physical dimensions of the original Switch.
And possibly other stuff like... like the new 3DS model, which had a few games that couldn't be played on the older 3DS model because of chipsets or things like that.
Yeah, I suspect that's not the case here. It's just, but there might be like some things that don't work 100% perfectly. They might not even know yet. Mm-hmm. And so, for the sake of covering all their bases, they just say, yeah, it will be backwards compatible. There may be some small exceptions. We actually did get one piece of information pertaining to that, which is in advance of the Switch 2 coming out at the end of next month, they're making a weird big change to how digital games work on the Switch.
Maybe you can explain it, because I just didn't get it.
I can explain it, because as an owner of multiple Switches, I can explain how it works now and
How it's supposed to be changing.
Yeah. So right now, if And this is all going on the basis of using a singular account. It works differently if you try and use multiple Nintendo accounts, but that's something separate. So right now, if you have more than one Switch, one's going to be marked your main Switch, and one will be marked as the secondary Switch. On the main Switch, you can play your games, whether or not you're connected to the internet, and anyone else that uses that Switch can do the same. On the other Switch, you can use games from that account as long as you're connected to the internet, and other people on that Switch cannot play those games. So the way this essentially is going to work is you're going to be able to essentially say, this game is going to be main on this Switch, this game is going to be main on that Switch, and then they'll kind of function exactly like the main secondary split, depending on where your virtual cartridge is located. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they're trying to push this metaphor of like that your digital games are now virtual cartridges and they move around the same way that those do. The other thing I'm seeing from news sites, which leads me to believe that they may have been provided an additional press release to clarify certain things, is that like if you have a quote unquote virtual cartridge, like a downloaded game on a Switch, it will function for all accounts on that Switch now. They won't have to be internet connected to function. So it's weird. I get why they want to go with this virtual cartridge metaphor. I think that ultimately it produces as many questions as it produces clarifications for the average consumer. Uh-huh. Ultimately, I think this is mostly a two steps forward, one step back. I think ultimately you're mostly going to have more things you can do, because they did announce some things that there was simply nothing like how this worked before, in terms of you can lend a digital game now. Like you can, if two Switches are physically proximate, you can lend someone your digital game for up to 14 days.
Oh wow,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I personally don't have a lot of use for that. You can also apparently, there's some way to lend them to other people. If you share a Switch Online family account, you can apparently lend them that way somehow. You're getting more privileges for what you can do with your digital purchases. And I think ultimately these are mostly positive things. They're just a little confusing until we see the exact limitations in practice. But I think for the most part, this is going to be a net gain. They talked about how you can move games between a Switch 1 and a Switch 2, which I think this is them kind of trying to make sure that you can migrate
your software.
Yeah, you can migrate your stuff, but you also don't have to migrate everything if for one reason or another you don't want to. It does give you that additional flexibility, because like, you know, anytime they've allowed you to migrate in the past, it's always been a one way and it takes everything.
So
this is something of an improvement over what has existed in the past, where, you know, it's always been this very all or nothing. This does show that they're being smarter about how accounts function and how their digital ecosystem functions, in a way that, you know, actually does give you some things that you didn't have before. So this is confusing, but I think ultimately a good thing.
Yeah, assuming like this works, your Nintendo account's going to work the same. Like if you're keeping your old Switch, you presumably won't have to do a migration. You can just load up the new Switch, connect to your account, and start downloading your games.
Yeah, and you can
pull up your saves,
or you can even just Yeah, or you could even just like decide, I'll just transfer these four games and just move them over right now.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, let's say, you know, your kid wants the Switch too, and then they give their old Switch to the younger sibling, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it'll be easier to move those games around in a way where multiple people, like multiple Switch households, will have an easier way of. Because that was one of the things that I would imagine part of this initiative is just, you've got a multi-Switch household. You want to encourage people, you know, you want to sell multiple Switches to a household if you can. You want to also sell them digital games because the margins on them are better. But if you have multiple Switches in a household, physical games just gave you more options. They were just a better deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so with this setup, this is meant to encourage, like, no, you go ahead and buy the digital games. You will be able to use them like your physical ones.
Yeah, no, and this is, I mean, for me, this is great. Like, this makes...
for the wheels of the world.
Yes, this makes giving my kids, like, access to some of the games I bought digitally on their Switches a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, if, say, like, I brought some of the old Lego games, which my older kid couldn't give a shit less about now, or they're on my account, I can just transfer them over to one of the kids' accounts, and then they can play them on their Switch, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is great.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, but I think there's a lot...
It's nice to see things moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
But yeah, so ultimately a pretty interesting direct, and especially given that we know that another one is coming next week. And the other thing that we haven't glossed over is that they also announced a news app, a specifically Nintendo news app for iOS and Android. It's called Nintendo Today.
That looked kind of neat.
Out of curiosity, I went ahead and downloaded that and ran through it. You sign into your Nintendo account, and it just gives you a giant list of franchises. It's like, which ones of these do you want news on?
Okay.
And you can select as many as you want. Obviously, they'd be happy if you select all of them, which I did. But, you know, it had stuff. It clearly had some, like, early articles articles, quote-unquote, but, like, content about things like let me actually just pull it open so that I can speak to precisely what's here on day one.
Right. I thought I saw something about Pikmin comics or something that looked neat.
Yeah. So I'm looking at you get stuff since there's nothing new to say about, say, Legend of Zelda today. They just have, they'll have, like, character profiles with key art, that sort of stuff. If I click into Animal Crossing, it'll show me stuff about, like, whatever villager they want to highlight today. If I click into Kirby, it's showing clips of a 25th anniversary orchestra Kirby concert. Mario is talking about, little trivia factoids about the first world in Mario 1. It mentions the direct itself. I think you can watch the direct within the app. Yep, you can absolutely just watch the direct within the app. Sort of like if you had a little social media feed that was just nothing but Nintendo shit.
That's cool. Does it show game releases or anything like that?
I presume it will, but presumably when they have game releases to show you.
It's got a calendar in it, so you'd figure they'd put the games on the dates. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have not checked through the full calendar. But yeah, like currently it's again, it just launched today and they're mostly just sort of showing what it is. And a lot of that is sort of like, it's sort of like if you had a social media feed that was just nothing but Nintendo shit. And yeah, again,
who doesn't want that, you know?
And then they can give you like push notifications on your phone that's like, hey, there's a new Nintendo Direct. I've seen people point out a lot of this probably has to do with them wanting something that won't just suddenly explode because a capricious billionaire bought a social media network.
Hmm.
They just like, nope, we'll just put it on your phone ourselves. But yeah, so that should be fun. You know, as of now, it's basically just a proof of concept. I will mention, since it was the Japanese Direct, but not the American one, despite being announced for American release, Super Robot Wars Y.
But why?
Why? Why?
Coming out.
Why not?
Coming to PS5, Switch, and PC in English.
But why?
I will hit you with
I'm
a truck.
I'm sorry, I have a very
no, you aren't.
Boring sense. Okay, maybe I'm not sorry. I have a very boring sense of humor, okay?
No, it's dad joke season, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, they announced that. They announced a handful of the series in it, although definitely not all of them. Some classic stuff like Combattler V, Aura Battler Dunbine, Mobile Fighter G Gundam. I'm always happy to see all three of those. Some more recent stuff like Majestic Prince and Macross Delta and Gundam Witch from Mercury and Get a Robo Arc. Witch from Mercury and Get a Robo Arc haven't been in a proper Super Robot Wars yet, so that's nice to see. Like to see those. But yeah, it was nice to see that get... It's a shame that it didn't make the English Direct. I would have... As a robot sicko, I would have gladly thrown away the interminable 2-minute trailer for Disney Coffee Shop, whatever the fuck, and shown Super Robot Wars Y. But I understand that I am not the median consumer in this context.
That looked weird. The Disney villain coffee shop game. I don't know what that's supposed to be.
That feels like someone like ran some combination of like checked SEO on certain terms and looked at the existence of AO3 and was like, I can sell this to someone. But Super Robot Wars Y. PS5, Switch, and PC. English this year. A notable departure from Super Robot Wars 30. I don't know what happened there, but for some reason that only came out on Steam in English, or at least only came out on Steam in the US, I should say. It came out in English as an import for other platforms, but it was strangely only released on Steam in America, so... Glad to see that won't be a continuing trend that's coming to America on everything. Except Xbox. Which is a shame, but I'm also going to be 100% honest with you. I think maybe 8 human beings would have purchased Super Robot Wars Y on Xbox Series X in the US.
That's probably a little generous, but yes.
Yeah, I'm rounding up.
From zero?
So here's a question. Why do you think so many of these companies are skipping Xbox? Is there a... Do we know the reason, or can we just speculate? What do you think?
Usually when they're skipping its niche games, I get the sense that the audience on the Xbox, real or imagined, is not considered to be the kind that... buying niche games. Especially like a lot of them are like 2D RPGs, 2D platformers, collections of old games. Usually those are what's skipping Xbox. I'd suspect that there's some assumption based on, I don't know, some form of marketing data that like the existing Xbox audience's purchasing habits do not extend to that kind of game.
Imagine there's a lot of Xbox users that just have Switches too that probably prefer to buy that sort of thing on the Switch.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, there's a limited reason to, you know, I do like the Xbox. I like the quick resume. I like all that. But, you know, there's limited reason for me to do that when I could get it on a handheld and just play it wherever.
Sure.
But yeah, so that would be my assumption, is that there's some sort of marketing data around these. Potentially also just some of this comes down to like what kinds of games that, you know, the other thing is the Xbox is currently the lowest selling of the major three consoles. Like, there's really no two ways around that. And yeah. it does remind me of back in the day, about 20 years ago, you would see a lot of games that came out on PS2 and Xbox and not GameCube.
Right.
Because it was just one of those things where it's like, with this turn of profit, I don't know, maybe, is it worth the manpower to test? Eh, probably not.
yeah,
especially when you get some of these niche games might not have a huge team assigned to them. And every, you know, you might not be able to argue for some sort of development assistance to do an additional skew of the game. And so if you're the one, like, assigning a budget for this game, maybe you just decide, like, you know, we make a better game on PS5 and Switch and Steam, and then, you know, like, maybe that ends up selling more than if we had made those versions a little worse in order to make sure an Xbox version could happen.
And there's, who's to say that they won't port them to Xbox at a later time? Because
some of them might see this happen down the line if they do better than expected, or there's some other internal reasoning, or if fans make enough of a fuss, like Microsoft might step in to try to grease the wheels on that. It has happened in the past. We can mention that at least one of the Capcom Fighting Collections that seemed to originally be skipping the Xbox suddenly appeared on the release schedule after seemingly Microsoft stepped in and, you know, again, greased the wheels a little bit to make that happen. So some of these might end up showing up on Xbox later. But I can understand why, you know, to look at something like Super Robot Wars, why a series that ultimately is Japan, it's preying on Japan, Japanese mecha show nerds. And then if we can, you know, if we can get, like, you know, the most socially unacceptable people from, you know, America and Europe, that's great. We'll do that. But, you know, within a rounding error, negative 50 people would buy Super Robot Wars Y on Xbox in Japan. So somehow they would return, they would like generate copies from the ether to return.
Well, I'm also considering that I think Microsoft still has that rule that the game has to run on Series X and Series S, and I recall some developers complaining about that before. Just the extra
I've seen devs complain about that, but almost none of the games that we're seeing skip the Xbox that haven't involved, like, you know, allegations, semi-substantiated allegations of Sony just sort of paying for it. Most of the ones that have skipped the Xbox have been, like, a lot of the things we see skip the Xbox are niche games. Like,
stuff that could easily run on the S.
Yeah, you know.
Okay.
I don't think that there was ever a worry that the Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection wasn't going to run on Xbox Series S. We're seeing a lot of things that show up on... Because, like, this phenomenon is most pronounced because we're seeing a lot of things that show up on PS5, Steam, and Switch. And that is a combination that very specifically means, no, you got it working on Switch. It could happen. That's part of why this has been so conspicuous. It's like, there's no point where you could see that list of platforms and think, well, there's no way that the Series S could run it. Like, that's the bottleneck. The bottleneck has to be, we don't think it's going to sell.
Right, okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, gee, Series X doesn't have any exclusive titles, you know, because everything's playable on PC. And it's like, well, gee, if you don't have first-party exclusives, then it can be harder to get the third-party publishers to, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have the exclusive first-party games, so the console doesn't sell, so then third-party publishers, it's not as profitable to put their games on your console. And I'm not sure that this everything's an Xbox marketing is helpful, but then again, I'm thinking Game Pass must be pretty lucrative for them, if, you know.
Not convinced it is. I'm pretty sure it's pretty. They're still at this point where they're hoping that it reaches that point, but I'm not sure that there's any. I'm not sure there's evidence that it actually has reached that. It's just Microsoft has so much money they can underwrite it. Like, Game Pass could reasonably be a failure for essentially 10 years, and Microsoft could continue underwriting it without really putting anything at risk. What I would say is, yeah, I think that the lack of a strong first-party initiative has made the Xbox a harder sell. And they've been trying to they've been trying to make that happen, but they've been trying to get around that by using, like, the convenience argument of Game Pass. And I think that Microsoft is looking at a 10 years from now, when they really just want Xbox to be a suite of software that everything runs. Microsoft's a software company. They make hardware, but they make hardware to sell you software.
Mm.
And
people often forget they actually make Windows computers themselves.
Yep. And then, you know, the other thing we're seeing is just that, like, the financial difficulty of convincing investors, especially American investors, that, like, you know, that there's any reason to plan for anything further out than 90 days from now. And so, you know, you look at, like, Sony's big first-party games, and it's like, these are the things that you buy that are theoretically the reason you're buying a PS5. And, you know, a year, maybe two down the line, they start coming to PC, no matter how big they are. We're just seeing that over and over. We're just sort of seeing this idea of, like, yeah, we want as much money from the big AAA software as possible, and then, you know, not with investor mindset of, like, not thinking or caring about the idea that you might be cannibalizing the hardware down the road. We continue to, there remains only one company that continues down the old path so far. Mario Kart 9 is not coming out on your PC anytime soon, but we'll see how that works out. But yeah, definitely, I think both Sony and Microsoft are sort of, like, softly trying to prepare for a point where they are just entertainment brands rather than hardware manufacturers in specific.
Another small piece of information, I guess Indiana Jones is getting ported to PS5.
Yeah, that's supposed to be out in June, I think.
What?
They announced a release date for that. They just hadn't announced. Yeah. I think that they had announced it was happening, but now they've announced a release date for it in, like, June, I think.
Yeah. And actually, here's another thing I find interesting. Forza Horizon 5 is coming to PS5, but it's going to be a PS5 Pro enhanced title. So I'm like, well, wait a second. It's actually going to look and run better on PS5 than on Series X if you get the Pro model. I'm like, that's...
Well, there's no Series X.
But the other thing I would say is, but then you also own a PS5 Pro, so really the joke is kind of on you?
I suppose. But I just, isn't that kind of ironic, though, that this Xbox exclusive franchise is going to probably run better on this other platform?
Yeah, I mean, well, they always had that accusation with the PC versions, so...
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's true.
It's one of those things that, like... Yeah, I mean, they just want you to associate their franchises with quality at this point. Like, that's one of the things that they're needing to rebuild.
True.
But, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of long and short of where it's at. What time is it? Good God. Okay, yeah. Yeah, we're gonna have to wrap this up. If we can hear about where we can find good reading material from Gaijin, I will do the traditional lead-in. So give me just one moment.
Buy my book.
Oh, well, if you must. Okay. Oh, well, it's no Nintendo Direct, but, yeah. Alright. So, with all this news of old games and new games and what games and what for games and why the games, we need to remember the simple pleasures of, you know, just reading sometimes. I mean, honestly, if we are playing Japanese role-playing games, we probably like reading quite a bit. So, for your reading pleasure, we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. If you enjoy tabletop role-playing games, if you like to live vicariously through other people's poor dice rolls and poor social decisions, we have, again, Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, currently at 13 episodes, 4 short stories, and a very long summer camp paralogue. Hopefully a new one to come as soon as I get the cover done. And also, again, working on technically 4th print collection, 5th paperback overall in the series, because, again, the paralogue is self-indulgently long. All available under the name Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. Again, that's Princesses of the Pizza Parlor on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. And for other genres, we also have... Vainglorious, Long is the Night, which is my attempt at lit RPG. I haven't had anybody actually tell me how well it's done that I didn't already know beforehand, so please, if you do not know me personally and you still want to give your opinion, please do so. I would love to hear it. Again, that's Vainglorious, Long is the Night, on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. And finally, we have Tanuki is a Teapot, Japanese Folktales, mostly about animals. Illustrated by myself, just because I could. It's been fun. And you can probably guess where you can find this book. Of course, Kindle Unlimited. Though I do recommend the print version just because, you know, pretty pictures. Okay. Anyway, thank you. And let's see, how does this thing work? Right here. 3, 2, 1.
Buy my book!
Yay.
There we go. All right. Yay. Okay.
And, Joe, tell us where we can find you.
Sure, you can find me on Blue Sky, Twitch, and YouTube, Smokin' Joe Gamer. And lately I've just been doing live streams of Final Fantasy 14 on Friday nights. I'm planning another one. That's around 8 or 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's twitch.tv/smokinjoegamer. That's the only game I've been streaming lately. I don't know what my Twitch plans are at this point in time. Hoping to get some viewers on Final Fantasy 14. We'll see. And just this week, I finally figured out how to do some raids in that game. So I did the there's three level 50 raids from A Realm Reborn that I just did for the first time, and I actually put those videos up on YouTube if you want to check them out, if you're, you know, not sure how to do that raid or how to find it. And I do end up dying a couple times, but no big deal. So there's that. And then over on YouTube, yeah, I did do speedruns of Super Mario Bros. 1, 3, and World on Mario Day, so you can still find those videos on YouTube, and you can follow me on Blue Sky, and I periodically will post stuff about upcoming videos or post links to YouTube or when I have a new video or just say whatever pops in my head. So you can follow me on there too. And that is Smokin' Joe Gamer. And you can chat with me on the RP Gamer Discord server as well, if that's something you'd like to do.
Yeah, you can get an invite to that server by going to the community tab of rpgamer.com, and there should be an invite link there. It's a nice little community. You can also ask us questions there in the podcast section. We didn't answer questions today because I'm tired. But we will next week. We are currently, we typically stream, if you would like to ask us questions during a stream, we typically stream Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. You can also catch, typically me, Joe, and Wields, getting angry at each other about one video game or another, or potentially angry at complete strangers, depending upon the day. when we do our Sunday night shenanigans stream, that's at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. You can also... ask us questions by leaving a comment under this on rpgamer.com. There haven't been any on the most recent episode that went up because Wheels put it up like 3 hours ago. Let's see. But yeah, I think that about wraps it up. So keep safe and see ya, Space Cowboys.
See ya.
See ya.